When you need to refuel between meetings or running errands, or you just want a healthy snack that squashes your hunger, Wonderful Pistachios, which come in a variety of flavors and sizes, by the way, are the perfect choice to fill you up and keep you going throughout the day. Wonderful Pistachios is also a good source of protein and a zero-guilt snack. Each 1 ounce serving has 6 grams of protein, guys, which gives you over 10% of your daily value. And with flavors like salt and pepper, sweet chili, and seasoned salt in the shelled variety, options like chili roasted, sea salt, and vinegar or jalapeno lime in the no-shell variety, you're sure to please your taste buds while snacking healthy. So check out wonderfulpistachios.com to learn more about how these little green wonders can power up your day.
Achieving a gorgeous grin from home isn't a total mystery with Bite Clear aligners. Just don't be surprised if all of your sleuthing friends start asking, "What's your secret?" Begin by ordering your at-home impression kit today for only $14.95. Bite Clear aligners are doctor-directed and delivered to your door. Treatment costs thousands less than braces. Plus, they offer flexible financing, accept eligible insurance, and you can pay with your HSA FSA. Get 80% off your impression kit when you use code WONDERY at Byte.com. That's BYTE.com. Start your confidence journey today with Byte.
You're now listening to The Jillian Michaels Show.
You know, this is not so funny, I don't think, but it's something I have kind of had a breakthrough on to a certain extent. Okay. And I'm going to share it. And I was watching a TED Talk that made me think I should talk about it. And it was called, like, should, you know, when to fight and when to let go, even though that wasn't at all what the talk was about. But it made me think about everything that I've kind of been through this year. And do you ever do this? You kind of get caught up in being like, oh, you know, as a woman, I think we do this. You don't want to be difficult. Don't want to be called a bitch. Everyone thinks I'm a bitch. Everyone calls me difficult.
Yeah.
You know, let me try to be the good girl. Let me try to be the good girl. And, you know, you ever do that?
Yeah, absolutely.
And, you know, I think it's surprising for people to hear that I do that. I don't really do it with women. With women, I cut to the chase. I'm like, I hate it.
Mm-hmm.
And I just tell them right off the bat. I'm like, I hate it, or I don't like it, or it could have been better, or whatever. And I do better with women, I think, for that reason. With men, oh my God, it's like this game of like, all right, how do I say I don't like it without them taking it personally? Like, if I tell this man I don't like it, you know, are they going to take it personally? And you know what? 9 times out of 10, they do.
Yeah.
Jake, if I was listening to a podcast and I called you one day and I was like, Jake, the editing could be sharper on this. You know, I just don't, I'm not happy. Step it up. How would you feel? Be honest.
I'd say, you know, my dad edits it, right?
Oh my God. All right. I don't know. Let me think of something that like
I don't know. Yeah. Cause if that, you know, if that was doing that, then I would feel slightly offended, but I would also, you know, make it better because it's my job to make it better and make you happy. But it would hurt a little bit because I do, you know, when I do my jobs, I do my best that I can.
I try, though. Here's the thing. I get into these situations, right, where you're like, you know, I always start with a pussyfooting around of like, oh, it's, you know, I think it's a great idea, but, you know, we weren't prepared for it in this particular instance. And, you know, let's try it over there. Let's do it over here. Oh, you know. And I try and I try and I try and like I try, you know, just all these different techniques to kind of move the needle.
Mm-hmm.
And I found in TV in particular that I've let go sometimes of these fights, and I'll label them all. I mean, losing it, I had a huge, huge disagreement with the network executive at NBC. And I was like, we can't. And here was why. Because he was like, oh, what we're going to do is we're going to do the show and we're going to air it in 6 weeks. And I was like, oh my God, we have no time for post-production.
Mm-hmm.
And we have no time for weight loss. This whole show is about before and after.
Right.
These guys are like 300, 400 pounds. And if you're taking people on this kind of rough journey, You know, we need these amazing before and afters. And you had people losing 50 pounds in, you know, 6 weeks, and they didn't look any different. It looked like they got a haircut. You know what I mean? It's like, right. And I, you know, I'm sitting there and I'm like fighting the fight. And the guy tells Giancarlo, calls my business partner and says, if she doesn't stop, we're going to rethink her, our entire relationship with her. Well, guess what? I stopped and the show didn't work. And when the show didn't work, no one wants to talk to you again anyway. So then we start the doctors, right? I don't know if I ever talked about this. Jay McGraw, Dr. Phil's son. We start out and we had a history of me being on the show of like what the dynamic was. And they were like, we want it to be more like The View. You know, we want you guys to fight. We want you guys to be more combative with each other. They added like another woman who was a sex therapist or something. Mm-hmm. And I was like, I don't know. You know, I don't think it's a good idea to like fight with your existing hosts. People are really attached to them. And no, you know, where's the Jillian Michaels we saw on Biggest Loser? And I'm trying to like, you know, it's Dr. Phil's son. Dr. Phil gives his son free reign, right? It's like, let me hand you all these television shows. You produce them. He gives him free reign. And so you upset Dr. Phil's son, forget it. You've upset Dr. Phil. You're blackballed in the Dr. Phil world. And at that time, Dr. Phil was like, I'm going to help build your career in this medium. And I just, and Jay McGraw's this young guy. He was a very young guy at the time. And he just had this idea, and I knew it was a mistake. But, you know, when I tried to push back, I could see, like, the, you know, a little bit of that kind of narcissistically wounded, like, anger, hostile. And so I caved. Mm-hmm. To make a long story short, all of a sudden, they're flooded with comments on Facebook about how everyone hates me. And what do? They turn around and they blame me. And they're like, well, you know, it seems like people don't like you. And I was like, You sat here and asked me to like scream and yell and fight with your hosts, and it's your show. And I wasn't a producer on that show. It was just hired talent. Mm-hmm. And, you know, sure enough, backfired. Never, ever, ever, ever speak to Dr. Phil or Jay McGraw. Never. Never speak to them. But I played the good girl. I did what they wanted. And then, you know, then they were like, oh, you know, we need to course correct this. And they were having me do segments on cankles and protein shakes. And I was like, this is a nightmare. Like, I couldn't ever get it to the middle. And that's when I was like, all right, this isn't working for either one of us. And, you know, we split. But you think I ever speak to them again? No. So that's two times I didn't fight. I made my voice known. I was shot down, but I didn't fight, right? Out of fear that it's like, I'll be blackballed. I'll never work again. Then on Sweat Inc., I saw a bunch of mistakes happening, right? And I'm like, I don't think this is a good idea. 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 Shut down. Shut down. And I was like, all right, you know, and I kept saying, I'm like, I don't understand why you won't listen. Then I see the first episode and it's really confusing, period. You can't tell what the hell is going on for all the reasons I was saying, right, as we were making the show. And I was like, you guys, I'm like, you know, trying to, and I was like, it's Viacom, you know, there's big executives involved. I didn't fight the fight. Now on Just Jillian, I mean, I've had it. I'm like, that's it. I don't care how much everybody hates me. Because, by the way, do you think anybody from Viacom or Spike called me to be like, you know, hey, it was great. Never heard from them again. And I didn't do anything to any of them. I wasn't difficult. None of it.
Yeah.
I voiced my concerns that ended up being true. So now on Just Jillian, I'm like, that's it. I don't care who hates me. I don't care how politically incorrect I am. I will get on the phone and I try diplomacy. I try, you know, judo instead of kickboxing. I try aikido, you know, pivot, parry, dodge, spin, you know, to try to, you know, appreciating people. I try all of it. But when it doesn't work, I'm like, I am not letting this go. Ready? I'm not letting it go.
No.
I have mutual control of the show and we're not going to get past go here. I don't agree with this. And I've decided, I'm like, I've done this too many times. And you know what? I'll never speak to these people anyway if the show fails. Doesn't matter. And that's where I've had this kind of breakthrough. I'm like, I don't care if you don't like me. I don't care if you call me a bitch. I don't care if you say I'm difficult. Because the two shows where I fought my fight, one was Biggest Loser. And I was like, I'm not doing that. I'm not doing this. And you know why? I had nothing to lose. I didn't care about a TV career. I was a trainer. And that's what I cared about. And so on that show, I always fought my fight. And it ended up being successful. And mm-hmm. You know what? It was hell for me with certain people involved. But I fought my fight. And when I continued to lose that fight, obviously, you know how that turned out. But when I fought the fight, you know, the show did work
when certain people were in control, and it worked for a long time. Mm-hmm. And now I'm looking at this one, I'm like, uh-uh. I'm like, I don't care. I'm at a point where I'm like, if this one doesn't work, there's no more TV. I'm not going to do TV anymore, at least not for a long time. I can't think of anything I would turn around and do right away. So, you know, I don't know, Mama. I just got to a point where I'm like, it's worth fighting for. I don't care what people think of me. I'm going to stand on my principles. And that's what I really think it's about, is that we get so caught up in what people think of us and the damage that it could potentially do to us that we abandon what we believe in.
Right.
You ever feel that way?
Yeah, I do. Not on that scale, but I mean, I think that I hate not being liked. I've always been I've gotten better about it as I've gotten older. It's definitely something that I'm aware of in myself, that I don't like people to be unhappy, and I want to be a pleaser. And it's like, why couldn't all of this just, everyone just go with the flow, be fine.
It doesn't work that way.
And I always feel better, regardless of what the actual outcome is, when I stand up for myself.
Yeah.
Because it's that anxiety leading up to it, thinking like, I'm going to have to get in a fight about something. And there's going to be conflict, and I don't like it. I'm not comfortable there.
See, that's interesting. I'm comfortable with conflict. It's the outcome of, like, I'm going to burn you. You're never going to work in this town again. I'm going to badmouth you all over town. And then I think about my family. Then I'm like, I can't burn these bridges. And I realize the bridges, by the way, if the project doesn't work, I realize now they're burned anyway. Doesn't matter how sweet you were. Doesn't matter how professional you were. It doesn't matter how hard you worked. If that project fails, everyone looks to point the finger. They do. Mm-hmm. Period. I don't care what business you're in. They're like, it's not like, oh, it was a collaborative effort. You know, let's go back to the drawing board. Everyone looks to point the finger.
Mm-hmm.
Everyone. There's definitely a way to go about it. It's definitely like, you know, you try to be diplomatic at first, and you try to, like, hey, you know, the words you use are so important, and it's, I see everyone's working so hard. You know, I was watching this and I was realizing that maybe it would be better if we tried X, Y, and Z, or can we try X, Y, and Z and just see, right? But you start to notice when you get to a point with someone where they're like, I'm not budging. Mm-hmm. And for me now, I'm like, the stakes are too high. I've failed so many times on other people's decisions in TV where it's like, it's out of my control. And I want to fail based on my own decision.
Right.
I want to fail because I made a mistake.
Mm-hmm.
Because there hasn't been one time where I didn't turn around and go, I knew it. I knew it. Yeah. I knew it. And, you know, Extreme Weight Loss Makeover or whatever it was came out. They sold the show right after I sold Losing It. And they did a year for their people to lose weight. And that show, I think, I don't know if it's still
on.
Yeah, a year. I had 6 weeks. So they did a year, and there were huge, amazing transformations.
Mm-hmm.
And it's like, you know, that show's still on the air, I think. Or, you know, this, I don't know. It's just, I think when something in your heart is telling you that there's a mistake happening or it's wrong, and you know you're going to pay the consequences, fight it, and don't worry about what people think about you. Try to fight, you know, try a little judo, try a little aikido, be smart. And what I mean by that is, like, don't come out swinging and punching people in the face. You know, try to make it a team effort, try to use kid gloves, try to get people on the same side. But I'm like, I don't care. I just don't care. It's got my name on it. It's my life. I will fight and fight and fight until someone literally shoots me down.
Absolutely. Well, and I think, what's that quote? You never regret the things you did. It's the things you didn't do.
You didn't do.
And standing up for yourself is one of them. I never felt bad about standing up for myself, but I felt bad not.
That makes sense? Yeah.
And especially with this, with your name in your face, you know, in what you're doing.
I'm not letting it go.
Well, look, and it's like,
no.
Just so you all know, I mean, so much magic happens behind the scenes of all of the entertainment that we consume that you don't really know. And it's like, people are gonna be like, well, I don't know why would Jillian do that? Why would, and it's like, those decisions aren't always made by the talent.
Yeah.
In fact, more often than not, they aren't.
Yeah.
And especially in this industry, it is really important. And in any industry that you're in, there's always gonna be that group of people that you're with, regardless whether you're on TV in a bank or you're a construction worker.
And egos get involved, and it's like, and you're exactly right, Autumn.
Draw your line.
Yeah. and be smart. Be smart about it. But if you know it's wrong, you know, don't regret it, because if it fails and it goes wrong, you're going to have a falling out with those people anyway.
Mm-hmm.
All right, that's it. That's it for this one. Veridesk time. Research has shown that sitting all day is bad for your health. Shocker. I think we all know that. So check out Veridesk.com. This is the award-winning height-adjustable standing desk that converts your existing desk or cubicle, any standing workstation you want. It's adjustable no matter what height you are, no matter what setup you currently have. Models start at only $175, people. Check it out today. Veridesk.com, V-A-R-I-D-E-S-K.com. It ships fully assembled. Did I mention Veridesk.com?
Are you okay? Batu, what happened over there, girl?
A little overzealous in my seat adjustment.
Holy cow, mom!
Took a dive.
Oh my goodness gracious. Well, are we ready to do a fitness segment?
I'm ready.
All right. Secret workout killers. Where'd you find this, Autumn? Oh, Daily Burn. Life by Daily Burn. Well, let's see if any of this is true. Not warming up. Is that a secret workout killer? It says it's essential. I don't think that is a secret workout killer. I'm just going to go through these and judge them.
Okay.
I don't think it's a workout killer, but I think you can get hurt. For sure. You got to warm up.
Yeah.
Because I've chanced on my warm up before. But I guess, you know, as long as I know how not to get hurt. But it does literally prepare the body for exercise. It oxygenates the blood. It's warming the muscles, ligaments, tendons quite literally. So they're more elastic. I think it prevents injury. But I wouldn't call it a secret workout killer. But this one I like.
Okay.
Not eating enough. Which is why I always say do not work out on an empty stomach.
No.
Because then you don't have the energy. You're tired.
And you're hangry. And look, no one really wants to be working out anyway. And to be hungry on top of that sounds awful.
I agree. Yeah, don't do that. Not training opposing movements. I don't agree with this one. Many trainers will advise working opposing movements, like pairing a bench press with a row. Okay. What is their muscle imbalances? This is garbage. First of all, you should train opposing movements over the course of your workout regimen, but they don't have to be done on the same day. That's ridiculous. You don't have to do that at all. You can train. I train push muscles on one day and pull muscles on another day.
Okay.
Yeah. So no, disagree.
Okay.
Again, this isn't a secret workout killer. That to me is just common sense. It's like, hey, train your body, holistically, so to speak.
Mm-hmm.
So make sure that you're not just doing chest, because like guys do their beach muscles and, you know, they have these tiny little calves and these huge upper bodies. Like for optimal health, you should train your entire body.
I used to work at a gym when I was in high school.
Oh my God.
And my boss was named Jim, and he'd always laugh, ha ha ha, Jim at the gym. But that was his biggest pet peeve. He was
Jim
this little
gym.
He was this little like short, shortish guy, not very tall, but he was just like fit. Big arms, big stomach, big butt, big legs, like real worked, real muscly. And that would drive him crazy. We'd have all these guys come and work out the beach muscles.
The beach muscles,
and
yeah.
And everyone,
biceps,
they'd walk out and he'd come up chest to the desk and he'd be like, look at those spindly legs.
It's true.
You need to get that guy in legs.
It's true.
It drove him crazy. And it's true. Yeah. It's like, guys.
I know.
We'd like to see a little more
Like, whenever you see a guy that will never wear shorts, you know he's got teeny little calves. And that's okay. But it's like, you should, you know, honestly, you should, for your health, train your body holistically, equally.
Mm-hmm.
And to not create imbalances. But I don't understand what they, like, that's not a workout killer. That's, to me, a workout killer is what's going to kill your actual workout in the moment. So, because I believe strongly in not training opposing muscle groups on the same day unless you're trying to build muscle.
Okay.
And the reason is so that you can build in adequate recovery time. So, for example, if I'm doing all push muscles, I can rest those muscles for 2 days because I'm going to train pull muscles the next day, recover, do cardio, and start again.
Mm-hmm.
I optimize my recovery time, which is actually one of the best things you can do to accelerate your results. his maximized recovery time.
Okay.
Working in a limited range of motion. I feel like they've titled this wrong. Working in a limited range of motion. That's not a workout killer, but it's not good for your body. You don't want to work in a limited range of motion. Obviously, you're going to limit your range of strength and mobility. But I still don't think that's a workout killer, Autumn.
Okay.
No.
This is why
training too long. That's a workout killer. Yes, for sure. Training too long. A common physiological response to training is the release of certain hormones into the bloodstream, such as testosterone and dopamine. Going past 45 to 55 minutes in the workout can put a body into a negative hormonal state. I don't know what negative hormonal state means. That's such a strange thing to say. But I think what they're trying to say is you're going to release stress hormone and put the body in fight or flight mode. And a negative hormonal state with regard to fat burning and muscle maintenance.
Mm-hmm.
You don't want to put your body into a state of extreme stress.
So 45 to 55 minutes. So if you go and take...
It also depends how you're training. Let's say you did a spin class for 60 minutes, but you weren't going crazy insane bananas. Or you were doing a long, steady, easy jog. Or you were doing a restorative yoga class. But no, you don't want to be doing high intensity training. There's a reason CrossFit is like, they're not long workouts because it's so crazy intense.
Yeah.
And that's why a lot of my stuff is 30 minutes. Because it's like, gets you in, gets you out. You know, and my harder stuff is 45 and I haven't done anything over 45. Okay. Training too frequently. Agree. Period. Overtraining. Saps you. And you know you're overtrained when your performance is going backwards and not forwards. Or when your resting heart rate is high and your training heart rate is low.
Oh, weird. So it kind of starts to flip.
Yeah. So you... Have you ever... I've noticed this where like I'll be at the gym and I'll be running and I'm like, oh my God. And it's like I'll be at a 6.5 miles an hour for 3 miles and I feel like my legs are cement. I'm dying. I'm winded. I'm miserable. And then there are those days when you're like, oh my God, I could go all day long. You know, if your performance is consistently decreasing, you're overtrained. You need to incorporate more recovery and more rest days.
Okay.
Agree with this one too. Not sleeping enough. Oh my God, big time. I'm not even going to read what they say about this. I'm just going to interpret it the way I interpret it. But when you're tired, period, your workout sucks. And this is plus the effects that sleep have on hormone balance. So sleep, of course, releases fat burning hormones. It allows you to feel more satiated when you eat. When you don't sleep, it's the opposite, right? We release cortisol. We release more ghrelin, which makes us hungrier. Sleep is key. I always prioritize my sleep. Talking too much. Let's see what this guy says about this one. Talking too much. Are you at the gym to change your body or chit-chat? Workout buddies can be great. Basically, he's saying you allow the body to cool down because you're stopping and chatting. Well, yeah, I guess if you are stopping and chatting and not staying focused, you'd be right. Yeah. Focus.
Yeah. Anything to be distracted to from what I'm doing. If I see a friend there and I'm wandering along, I will stop.
Yeah.
And talk.
He says texting. But you're playing in airplane mode. I like that.
Mm-hmm.
I like that. Yeah, because you can just get, like, distracted. He's right.
Okay. Well, and also, separate from being distracted, like, take it as an opportunity to turn off for 20 minutes, you know, or, like, whatever you're doing that you cannot be connected.
Yeah. Copying others' exercises. There's an inherent danger in monkey see, monkey do. You might do the exercise wrong. This is a great way to hurt yourself. I don't get it. That's stupid. I'm not going to buy that one. I mean, don't do anything you can't do. And if you can't do it, talk to a trainer and have them teach you to do it.
There you go.
I mean, yeah, I like, here's what I take away from this that's the most important. And I'm going to add one to it. Sleep. Lack of sleep can kill a workout. Lack of hydration can kill a workout, man. Mm. If you're dehydrated, even just slightly dehydrated, your level of fatigue is so much more significant. Even when you're not working out, just going through the course of your day, working out on an empty stomach. Another one, bad music. Sorry, I'm doing these myself. No.
I would prefer, yeah.
Oh my God, bad music. Sometimes when I'm at the gym and it's like, God forbid I ever forget my headphones, and they're playing like bad 1990s pop music, I want to put a gun to my head.
I saw this little cartoon the other day and it was just two pictures. And it was guy at the gym, like on the treadmill, about to plug in his iPhone and the battery sign like dies. And then you can see like the And then the next picture was girl at the front desk, like, you're leaving already?
Yeah.
She was like, forget it.
Yes.
My phone's dead. I can't listen to my music. Like, I'm out of here.
When I forget my phone, or like if I forget my headphones at home, I just go home. I just go home. I literally will turn around. I'm like, no, I can't do this today. And I go home.
So you need a glove box set.
You got it. That's right. All right. Well, hope that was helpful, everyone. Okay. So I tell people that Nicole thought Medium said meow. We're talking about Bombas, guys. They sent me socks, but because I had some socks, I gave a couple pairs to Nicole, who on the inside it says medium, but she thought it says meow. And now I'm just looking at Autumn pissed. Just pissed. But Autumn's only upset is that she didn't get the socks. Well, how's that for a spot? Bombas athletic leisure socks that look better, feel better, and perform better. Go to bombas.com/Jillian and you can get 20% off any size order for a first-time customer. They donate a pair of socks for each pair that you buy. Bombas has donated more than 300,000 pairs of socks to those in need. If you don't like them, they'll refund your entire purchase so you can shop with zero worry. They come in black, navy, gray, and white. Hello. You can wear them for any occasion. Just go to bombas.com/Jillian, bombas.com/JILLIAN.
All right, guys, so we have a very special guest with us today, Jillian.
I know who it is.
Do you?
I do. Cool.
So here with us today, we have Dr. Gail Saltz.
Yay!
Yay! And so she's going to be talking to us about the psychology of holiday sales.
Where's all the bio stuff that's so impressive? I knew you'd mess it up. Dr. Gail Saltz. Go on, doctor.
She cuts me off before I even get to my lead-in.
You're supposed to give all the...
And
do I need to do it?
I think maybe you should.
Just all around great gal. Go for it.
She is the best. And along with being a great gal, she's a best-selling author.
There we go.
And associate professor of psychiatry at the New York Presbyterian Hospital, Weill Cornell School of Medicine. And for more information on her after the segment and any time, you can follow her at Dr. Gail Saltz on Twitter. And that's GAILSALTZ.
Dr. Gail, how are you?
I'm good. How are you?
I'm doing well. So Autumn tells me that you know me, and you know I'm going to manipulate this segment, of course, to be all about my issues during the holidays. But so today we're supposed to be talking about the psychology of holiday sales.
Yeah.
So can you explain exactly what this means? And then, of course, I was wondering, on a personal level, would you also think about how people – tend to feel like there's so much pressure to buy things.
Yeah.
And it kind of, I don't know, it messes with me personally. I wonder if it messes with everyone else. So we'll start with holiday stress, and I won't keep you for too long, but I wanted your thoughts on both. So will you start with the psychology of holiday sales? What
sure.
goes on
well,
there?
Well, first of all, let me say, if it messes with you, you would not be alone. There really is a whole psychology to the sale, and the holiday surrounding the sale just raises the temperature on all of this. And you know what? Stores and marketers know this. In fact, if you think about it, right, marketing is really the psychology of selling, and
yeah.
they have tapped into what are innate, I'll say even primitive. Feelings on our part that go way back.
Really?
So that if you think about it, when you go into a store and things are on sale and there are many people there trying to snap them up, a number of things are triggered for us in our deeper brain structures, and they are feeling scarcity, you know, they're going to get it, I'm not going to get it. What happens if I don't get it? So the fear of things being scarce.
That's amazing.
Which charges us into the concept of hoarding. And these are just, you know, evolutionarily, they kept us in very good stead at one point, right? So we, you know, we're hunter-gatherers by instinct.
Okay.
And, you know, there was only one, whatever, buffalo or, you know.
Right, of course. Sort of basic survival is what you're talking about.
You wanted to be the one to get it or so that you could eat and survive, and the other people, well, maybe they wouldn't. And that's what happens when you go into a store and there's a sale going on and there are many people trying to get it. It's very hepped up. It creates that sort of frantic, primitive urge to grab it.
And really? You're saying that people are not deciphering between like these basic survival urges and, say, a flat screen TV at half off?
You know, believe it or not, if they could think that to themselves, then it wouldn't affect them. But the problem is they're not thinking that. They're going in and they're just knowing that they have this sort of unconscious urge-like feeling of, as somebody else reaches to get the thing that they were thinking about. Mm. And in addition, you layer on top of that psychologically that stores are pumping in, you know, music and decorations and even smells. They'll put out those Christmassy smells, the holiday smells, which evokes this childhood feeling of wonderful memories, of feeling, you know, that sense of home. And that actually just steers you further into, I need to get those homey things. I need to have them for myself. For men, it's often further charged up by something, let's say, items that may be testosterone-producing, like,
really?
You know, macho-y items, like, you know, the car, or like you said, the big TV, something that makes them feel that way may actually cause them to produce a little more testosterone, which is feel good for them.
That's incredible. And
the same is true for women often. You know, sort of the wish to adorn yourself, the wish to, you know, you may be seduced by, let's say, if you're feeling a little insecure, if you're feeling, you know, in terms of your self-esteem, those kinds of things like jewelry and clothes and makeup may really play into your individual psyche at that time.
Why is it just the sale, though? Like, why wouldn't people be like this all the time of, like, consuming, consuming, consuming? What is it about the sale that they're like, oh, my God?
Yeah.
It, you know,
because,
it seems silly to me.
When you think about it, by telling you that you are getting the bargain of the century, when you get it, you feel this super confidence, right? I am such a skilled shopper. I just got such a great deal. This says something about me. I now feel good about me, and that's positive reinforcement, which makes you want to keep doing it again and again.
This is so funny. What's happening in the room right here, if only you could see it, is Autumn laughed, because I'm guessing that's you.
Oh, my God. I love getting a deal.
Jake was like, that's my dad. That's my dad.
That is my dad a million times over. I know he's listening to this, editing this right now. That is you, Dad.
That's,
you know,
fascinating.
Everybody has these susceptibilities. They're not, it's not even, obviously some people are more susceptible than others, but this sort of, like I took a gamble and I won kind of thing, some people are more susceptible to the dopamine feedback of that, like gambling. But pretty much everybody has some of these elements in there, which is why it's so universal to go out in these sales and feel really compelled.
But then isn't what happens that you end up buying stuff you don't need and spending?
Yes.
Right.
Yes, that is exactly what happens. This is why if you were asking me what should I do or is there anything I can do to counterbalance this, I would say to you, yes. I would say make your list before you go to the store. Tell yourself you're not buying anything that wasn't already on your list.
Okay.
And you have a ceiling price for what you're willing to pay for that item, and you're not going to go above it. If you go without a list, just I'm going to look around, I'm going to see what looks good, see what strikes, then you will be susceptible to these things. If you have made decisions before you're in the environment, it will help you contain those feelings.
Oh, my gosh. This sounds to me, we did a segment with a guy, Phil Lempert, who's the supermarket guru, and he said the same thing about grocery shopping.
Yeah.
He's like, make your list so you don't impulse buy all this other crap that you don't need. And it tapped into that kind of psychology of like, I need this. Oh, my God, I have to have it. And you end up buying two boxes.
Or even if you might not even feel like I have to have it, you might feel like I'm going to feel so good. And we're really drawn to things, of course, that make us feel good. So, you know, you could be talking about, well, you know, you could be saying to yourself, look, I deserve this. It's been a rough year. It's been a rough month. My boyfriend just broke up with me. My kids have been a pain in the neck. You know, terrorists just struck in Paris.
Right.
I mean, you could, you know, life is hard. And so it's easy, very easy to rationalize and justify for yourself and saying, you know, I deserve a reward and this is going to make me feel good. And the feel good might not even be I'm buying something for myself. It just is going to make me feel good to buy whatever for my kids because they're going to be so happy and they're going to smile and then I'm going to feel like the best mom and all of those things. It's just very easy to succumb to that.
There's a massive parallel with what you're saying right now and the way that I see people overindulge and use food as comfort. And it seems almost like a similar type of addiction, right?
Sure.
It's like, I deserve it. They'll go through McDonald's because they deserve it. It's the one thing they did for them that day was the Blizzard or whatever the heck they get that ends up killing them, you know, with heart disease and diabetes, but in the moment. So is there
well,
a way
well,
to...
As you well know, right, there's a huge emotional component to eating, and the psych of food obviously has a very similar path in and to some degree even more so because we are talking about, you know, food being at the root of a lot of that hunter-gatherer, you know, psyche.
Right. And would... Okay. What do you think, how does somebody get out of that kind of consume mindset? Because I found, like, the other day I was talking to Heidi, and she's like, I don't understand why you hate the holidays so much. And I was like, let me lay it out for you. All I do is sit down with my assistant, and we got to get the jump on it. Autumn remembers this.
Yeah.
6 weeks ahead of time, and I'm like, all right, here we go. And we just start making the list of, like, got to buy this person, got to buy that person, got to buy that person. And by the time I'm done, I'm like, oh, my God. It just becomes all about, like, what I have to buy and how much is it? Did I spend enough? And she's like, you know, you do this every year and you're just such a Scrooge. I'm like, I am, because I wish for once I could turn around and just be like, you know what? I made a donation to, you know, who knows, some good charity in your name. But I feel like it's become so much about buying things and you know, what you can buy people and what they expect me to buy them. And I wonder, like, do other people feel this way? Because I have enough money to not have this destroy me financially, and I still find it stressful and kind of depressing.
Well, I think you're certainly not alone in that. I mean, some people are more disturbed by the commercialism, which is really, you know, is about marketers having subsumed this holiday to, you know, push out products and, you know, their businesses and everybody's hoping to make money at this time of the year.
Yeah.
So, you know, that is certainly, there is a machine and obviously, you know, if you feel compelled to participate in the machine, I think the difference between how much one is suffering versus not is how much you feel you get to make a conscious choice versus how much you feel you're being made to do something.
You're so smart. That is so right.
Can, you know, if you can say to yourself, like, these things I really do want to do, I consciously have made a decision, even if I don't like certain things about them, I've made a conscious decision, I want to do them. They're my choice. And then if you also incorporate some things that maybe for you, Jillian, let's say, do feel like the holiday should be about, you know, maybe the holiday in your mind should be more about, let's say, gratitude, like things that you do appreciate, things that you do feel thankful for, and you introduce some of those into the holiday. So maybe it's not just like one for you, but it's more like, okay, I got some things because I feel like I need to do that, let's say from business or family perspective, but we're going to sit around the dinner table and for whatever it is, 2 weeks before the holiday every night, I want to talk about, like, what do you feel grateful for today? Could be anything.
You had
a wonderful cup of tea today and you really enjoyed it, or, you know, you ran around outside and it was just like a really good time. Whatever it is, but each of you bring something that you feel grateful for. And, you know, actually, when you do that, it actually impacts you over time. I say 2 weeks because 2 weeks is a bit of a magic number. After 2 weeks, it actually has an impact on mood. And it might be something that you decide to make sort of a regular habit.
I love that because it's like I look at my kids who I adore, but it's like, you know, Heidi, what do we want for Christmas? And, you know, they start listing all this stuff. And I think, are you kidding me? Like, we have so much crap in this house. These kids are, and this is what this is about to them. And she's like, well, what do you want to do? And I was like, not this. Like, I wish it didn't have to be about all of that. And I love your, right. I love what you're saying. Cause it, you're right. It should be about, everybody should be able to kind of incorporate the things that mean something to them. And I think you saying that empowers me to do so, and hopefully will empower a lot of our listeners to kind of take a step back. And I've heard people even say, you know, they feel guilty because they don't have the money to buy their kid the PlayStation X, Y, or Z. And I'm like, is that really what this has become about? You feeling less than?
I think it's particularly distressing in those kind of situations where really that's not where the money is best spent.
Yeah.
And it does put tremendous stress. And so people go in, then they shop at these things, then they've spent money they really didn't have to spend. They feel terribly stressed and even depressed after the holidays. So that's why I say, you know, come armed with really what is appropriate to do. Remember that, honestly, even for kids, it really often is the thought that counts. And, you know, if you thought about them and what they like and you cut something small and or you did, and let me add this, this is really important. What people remember that makes them happy is really not, for the most part, material things. It really is experiences. So a gift of an experience, and I'm not talking about, so we all went to Cabo. I mean, like, an experience like, we're going to go, you know, ice skating, and I thought it would be cool to learn knot tying. So I got this cool book, and like, we're going to sit around and like learn how to tie different kinds of knots together. Something that feels like you're doing it together.
Right.
It's fun. It's tuned into your family. Those are great gifts that don't cost.
I love that.
That's cool.
I love that a lot. Idea. Yeah. Dr. Saltz, I can't thank you enough for this segment, of course. And for people to learn more, we can go to your website at www.drgailsaltz.com. Her books have been so helpful to my family. I can't recommend them enough. Is there any particular one you want to throw out there, Dr. Saltz?
Oh, gosh. Let's see. Well, I guess since we're talking probably to families a lot right now, maybe The Amazing You and Getting Smart About Your Private Parts for those families that want to think about sex ed for the holiday.
I got to tell you, we got to do another segment on when I read my son that book. That's a whole other segment, but it was life changing in the household. I got to tell you, Dr. Saltz, thank you so much. You have been, of course, immeasurably helpful, and we love having you on. We look forward to having you on again.
Great,
thank
I
you.
Look forward to it too. Happy holidays.
Happy holidays.